WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In French, the word débutante literally means female beginner. The term referred then to a girl or young lady from an aristocratic or upper-class family who had reached the age of maturity and, as a new adult, was introduced to society at a formal debut presentation. It still means that today, and the practice of ushering young women into adult society remains in use today, particularly at holiday time, and it happens all over the country, indeed all over the world. Dr. Cynthia Lewis, Dana Professor of English at Davidson College, has researched the debutante culture and wrote an article for the Southern Cultures Journal called Secret Sharing, Debutantes Coming Out in the American South. She joins us to talk about this ongoing phenomenon. Welcome back to the program. Get a little closer to that microphone. It's your friend, you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to see you again. We're also joined by two Davidson seniors, Sarah Freeman and Margaret Holt Smith, debutantes both. Sarah is a history major from Richmond, Virginia, who participated in the Bal du Bois last summer and will also be coming out at the Richmond German in December. She is, she tells us, at least a fifth generation debutante. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Bal du Bois, what's the literal translation of that?
I think it means ball of the woods.
Ball of the woods.
Not sure what the origin of that is.
And then I said you were coming out at the Richmond German.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
The German was sort of like a dancing society that was formed after the Civil War. It has like 400 members,
okay.
All men. And so it's like a dancing club for adults. They have a couple dances every year. The Christmas German is where it features debutantes.
But it's all men.
Their wives aren't considered members, but they're always in attendance.
Margaret Holt is a senior public health major from Burlington and made her appearance in 2010 as a third-generation debutante in Raleigh at the State Ball sponsored by the Terpsichorean Club. Terpsichorean, what does that mean? Do you know? Because I don't know what it means. I was going to look it up and then I forgot to do it.
I don't know what it means. It sounds very similar to the German society that Sarah was talking about, all men, and the ball is a fundraiser.
There's a theme running here, isn't there, Cynthia? All men, which we're going to talk about here. You told us, Cynthia, that your driving question for the piece that you wrote for the Southern Cultures Journal was why a self-respecting, intelligent, independent young woman would want to become a debutante today. And that tells me that you went into this exercise somewhat with a bias. Why?
I did have a little bit of a bias until I started considering ways in which I myself participate in elitist institutions. And then I began to view the debutante scene a little bit differently. I think we all gravitate towards some form of elitism, some form of exclusivity, and it comes in many forms, and debutante societies are just one of those forms.
I'm actually glad to hear you say that, because I think that's not necessarily true in modern society. I think we've watched the democratization of a lot of things, much to my chagrin, and much to the, I think, lowering of societal values in all kinds of areas. And for you to say that we still want to be elite is encouraging.
Oh.
We don't want to go to the lowest common denominator. We actually would like to be in an exclusive club somewhere which says that we are a cut above. And I find that encouraging. Do you? You're younger than I am, a lot younger than I am. So, ladies, Mary Holt, Sarah Freeman, do you feel that way about this?
I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I think the reality is that people aren't going to willingly give up their power if they can hold it. Everybody wants to be set apart, at least in some aspect of their life, or wants to subscribe to something that makes them different or more than the people around them, even if they're not willing to admit it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, as unflattering as it may be to mankind, you know, emphasizing sort of hierarchy and status is something that affirms self-esteem for it's natural for a lot of people. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing, but I think that there are alternatives that you know, to, I think there are alternatives that are equally
bad. I don't want to get stuck on this word elite, but, you know, we've just been through a four-year election cycle, it seems like, and anybody who was accused of being an elitist was a bad person. And I don't think that that's true.
Well, I think it depends on how you're measuring belonging, how you're measuring elitism. I think for me, the question about debutante society is what merits elite in that situation. In an academic situation, intellectual merit or intellectual accomplishment is the marker of belonging. And so that's something that you actually earn or something that you do. A lot of celebrity status is just based on being a celebrity. You know, they're a person who's famous for being famous, that kind of thing, versus something that's really earned. So I guess I would question, you know, I went into this project questioning and I continue to question the grounds on which some people are singled out or chosen to participate in this ritual and others are excluded. And part of what I theorize in the article is that belonging is something that we all want in one way or another, and the secrecy and the sort of boundaries involved in debutante society are about keeping some people inside a particular social circle and other people outside.
And that's the problem with it, I suppose. Well, let's go back to the original question that you posed about why you wanted to write this article, and I'll turn it around to Sarah and Mary and ask, why would a self-respecting, intelligent, independent young woman, to use Cynthia Lewis's words, want to become a debutante in the 21st century? And I'll start with Sarah.
Well, I think that the primary reason is a little indulgent and frivolous, and that's that it's really fun. I mean, it's a huge party and like a whole year, really, of parties thrown by individual girls. You get to buy a wedding dress, sort of somewhere in between like prom and your wedding in terms of big days that you're the star of.
You buy the wedding dress for this?
Yeah. Oh. People make appointments at bridal, like all the bridal boutiques in Richmond but around Christmas.
Wasn't the traditional reason for these balls to say, I am now an adult and I am available to a select few, and here I am, let's meet and chat?
Yeah.
Seems like you're jumping the gun to buy the, to buy the dress already.
My mom when she was a debutante too, and she convinced my grandmother into buying a way more expensive dress than she'd originally intended because she said, I'm going to wear it at my wedding too. Mm-hmm. That is never what happens.
So do you wear the wedding dress at the ball?
Yeah. It's cause just it's an easy way, I guess, to get, maybe not an easy way, but it's a white, they're white dresses.
Right. So. I was going to say,
white ball gown.
Okay. So it sort of fits.
Well, it can't be your wedding dress because if you happen to meet the guy that you're going to marry,
he's already seen you.
He's already seen you. It's bad luck. You can't do that. So you have the dress. So it's fun.
It's fun. I think part of it too was that, I mean, for me, I think it affirmed sort of a part of my identity as, you know, I grew up with a lot of emphasis on like my family history and a lot of pride about being from Virginia and from Richmond and having roots there. And I don't know, it felt good to sort of, you know, come out and sort of cement my connection. It felt like I was cementing my connection to my hometown and celebrating my ties to it. And I think also part of what appealed to it to me is that, I consider myself a modern woman, but it was kind of fun to have a night where I was sort of play acting the Southern Belle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The opportunity to just sort of be on modern just for a night.
Well, I want to get your reaction to this, Mary, but we've done a couple of shows on the drive in young girls. We're talking about kids, little kids, to be princesses. This is the fulfillment of that,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, it's ultimate princess. Yeah. I think in a lot of ways in terms of this the ball gown and the fairy tale night and then in sort of the elitist way too.
This and your wedding days are the 2 days you get to be a princess.
Yeah.
Mary, I want to get your take on why an intelligent 21st century modern woman would want to do this.
I think for me it was purely legacy. when I initially got the invitation, I was just really confused why I would get it, why four girls out of my entire town would be chosen.
Only four?
Really? Yeah, four. There are about maybe 200 from the state at this ball, but four were from Burlington. And I just wondered what set me apart from the other 700 to 1,000 girls in my town who seemed equally as appropriate. And I think for me, the thing that really drove my motivation was my grandmother did it and my mother did it. Mm-hmm. And if I had not done it, I felt that they would be really disappointed. And it was this thing that was so monumental in their life and the thing that they still clung to. They still had their dresses, and every debutante has a hand-painted stool that they sit on while they wait to debut across the stage. And I think when I initially didn't want to do it, my mom and my grandmother were really disappointed and were really excited about me doing it. And so for me, it was more about pleasing my family. And
why didn't you want to do it initially?
I just didn't get it. I didn't want to buy a white dress. I didn't understand what the point of it was.
And you do now?
No. It was fun, and it felt good to be recognized, but I still don't understand what makes me appropriate and someone else not appropriate.
It's interesting that she mentioned her mother and her grandmother, and you're fifth generation, mm-hmm. so it goes back to great-great-great-grandmothers doing this. It is a 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century kind of thing, mid-20th century kind of thing. What makes it relevant today? You've done a lot of talking to a lot of people in the course of writing this article, Cynthia Lewis. So tell me what makes it relevant today, and these women can chime in as well.
I think Margaret Holt just put her finger on probably the most common comment I heard about what makes it relevant, and that is to please one's family, to make your mother happy, to make your father happy. You know, as Sarah said, to become a part of the community. I guess I can see that, but I also heard an awful lot of what Margaret Holt just said about, I'm not really sure why I did that. I just didn't really think about it. And that sort of shocked me, especially coming from really smart, wonderful women like these women right here, that there was no more reflection on it, really, than that. Well, this is just something that I'm expected to do because of who I am.
But don't we have a lot of traditions like that that we don't really fully understand in the world today? We don't certainly don't understand the origins of it anymore, of some of these traditions anymore. We just do them because that's what we do.
Right, but I think that's true. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing.
Okay. Were you a debutante? I'm just curious.
Heavens, no.
Something wrong with being a debutante?
I grew up in Ohio. I don't think there are debutantes in Ohio.
That leads to this is not necessarily a Southern phenomenon.
It's not. It? No. In fact, I did research on debutante societies all over America. New York has a very strong, very elitist debutante subculture. California, San Francisco has another one. St. Louis, the Veiled Prophet Ball.
Denver, Dallas. So What's wrong with Ohio? What happened there?
I was in a sorority in college, so maybe I sort of half qualified.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more with Cynthia Lewis, who is a professor of English at Davidson College, author of Secret Cheering, Debutantes Coming Out in the American South for Southern Cultures Journal, also with Sarah Freeman, and I keep calling her Mary, although she wants to be called Margaret. Margaret Holt, both seniors at Davidson College and both debutantes. We're going to come right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, offering complimentary parking with tickets to select shows like The Lion King, War Horse, and more now through December 31st. Gift certificates also available. Details at 704-372-1000. And the Holiday Market at the 7th Street Public Market, offering custom, handcrafted, and one-of-a-kind holiday gifts and home decor from local artists and businesses now through December 21st. Details, 7th Street Public Market.com. Mecklenburg County's Department of Social Services has been under fire recently. Last month, the Observer and Q-City Metro published the findings of a secret report paid for with taxpayer dollars examining the management structure and efficiency of the department. But why should such a study be secret? And just what is the state of the county's social services department? We look at that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama and the lame duck Congress, priorities and prospects for compromise on tax rates, spending cuts, and other key policy decisions.
You can join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Cynthia Lewis is with us, professor of English at Davidson College, along with two seniors at Davidson. Sarah Freeman is a history major and a debutante from Richmond, Virginia. And Margaret Holt, I'm going to get your name the way you want here, is a senior in public health at Davidson and made her debut in Burlington and will do it again in Raleigh, or you've already done it?
I debuted in Raleigh in 2010.
Okay. This used to be, as I said in the very beginning, for young women of aristocratic backgrounds. We have very few aristocrats in America these days. So what sets this group of young women apart in debutante culture across the country? Who are they?
There are two standards, I guess. One is legacy, family history. Often accompanied by a great deal of wealth, so old money. Mm-hmm. Although in Charleston, that's really less the case because there's not a lot of money in Charleston. But still, in Charleston, it has to do with your patriarchal heritage. And then the other marker is money, even new money. In some debutante societies in New York, for example, you can just really buy your way in, and you don't necessarily have to have any kind of family connections back to the Mayflower.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a debutante culture in Charlotte?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think they just had their ball fairly
this weekend.
I think so, yeah.
Because as a kid, I remember seeing pictures in the paper, mm-hmm. And I grew up in Virginia too, in the paper of debutantes who had come out. And either the pictures were from the ball or they were to announce the coming out of a young woman before the ball. Is that still what happens? Mm-hmm. Do newspapers cover this as mm-hmm. on the society pages?
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Is that part of the perk? Is that what you – do you want that kind of coverage?
We had like maybe one or two articles about it. I didn't think about it that much doing it, but.
Do you feel elitist? Because the word elitist has come up in this conversation a lot in the beginning, partially due to me, but also because Cynthia Lewis uses it. She said that this is kind of an elitist thing. Do you feel elitist as having participated in it or having been invited to participate in it or with the group of people around you who do participate in it?
Maybe a little. And I know the Belle du Bois, I think they try and sort of conceal the elitism a little bit. We're not actually called debutantes. We're sponsors. It's like it's marketed as a charity event because it does raise money for a rehabilitation center in Richmond. So I think that there have been sort of attempts to sort of conceal maybe the patriarchal and the classist elements. But on some level, you have to call it what it is.
And you mentioned you were one of four young women from Burlington
yes.
chosen to participate in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. How does the process work? Who chose you?
Great question. I'm sure that there are people who know a lot more about this than I do, but from what I understand, there is a group of older women in the community that are constantly looking and observing, and they were Debs themselves.
And of course, your mother and grandmother were both Debs. Did they put a good word in for you? Did they prod a little bit?
I mean, even I think that my grandmother was on the committee because my mom was a head debutante, but my grandmother would never admit it. It's very secretive. You don't know who's on the debutante committee. You don't know how you're chosen. I think I knew that I would be because of the legacy and because of who my family is in the community. And as far as your elitist question goes, I think it depends which community you're in. So at home, I feel very elitist because I'm one of four, and it was in the newspaper. It felt like graduating. We sent out announcements. There were pictures. There were parties and balls and luncheons. I didn't attend any of them.
Really? Why?
Didn't even RSVP because I was a really bad debutante by debutante standards. But I think at Davidson, people who are foreign to the culture, it just seems a little ludicrous. Like, I would not identify myself as a debutante unless people knew about it, just because it's not normative in the culture of Davidson. So it seems a little bit ridiculous.
Well, now, Margaret is a skeptic about this, even having gone through the process. You seem to be less so, Sarah. You just seem to be more open to this and more relaxed with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me it was something
is that the difference between a fifth and a third?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I actually didn't receive any pressure from my family to participate. I think my dad especially would have been no tears shed had I spared him the expense of being a debutante. But I don't know. It was a fun experience for me, and I feel like I'm someone who's a history major, always a little nostalgic. One of those types is nostalgic for sort of eras that I never lived. So I don't know. I enjoyed being a non-modern woman just for a night.
How does the invitation arrive? What form does it take? And it might be different, I suppose, from Richmond to Raleigh, but how did you get your invitation?
For the Bal de Bois, they usually invite the graduating class of the school I went to, St. Catharines, I think everyone in our graduating class received an invitation, and I think maybe girls from some other schools too, maybe Collegiate, which is another private school in Richmond. And then there are a lot of girls who choose not to participate, so they kind of cast a wide net.
So you're a senior in college. When did you go to this ball?
I went this summer.
This summer.
This summer,
and so
yeah.
It's a graduating class of your high school?
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken 3 years for them to get around to inviting that graduating class? Is that because there's an age limit or an age requirement?
Mm-hmm. They try and do it when I wasn't actually 21, but they let me do it with my class. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be when you're 21 because there's alcohol served at the event.
I see. So
it used to be 18, and most societies raise the age of the debutante cohort in correspondence with the new drinking laws, mm-hmm. because there was so much underage illegal drinking going on.
Yeah, and you were saying off the air that the function of the escorts, the young men who are there to squire you, is to simply get drinks. Is that right?
That's what we were asking. We have to have each three escorts, and mine were concerned about what their duties were going to be, so we asked a woman on the committee, and she said, they just bring you drinks and make you feel special, that sort of thing. So
that sounds dangerous to me. Okay.
I think everyone behaved themselves at my debutante ball, but I mean, it's a party.
Does the invitation come in the mail?
Yeah, it comes in the mail.
It's an engraved invitation, that kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm. And it's something that my parents had. I got an invitation to be a debutante, but then you also have an elaborate invitation that goes to a lot of households in Richmond for the event. There's, a wide attendance. Like I said, it's a sort of a charity gala. And I'd seen the beautiful invitations every year. My parents had always gone. And so it was sort of some build-up to the year that I was a debutante.
Same thing for you, Margaret?
For me, the invitation came in the mail. It wasn't widespread. They were very selected, and they chose the individuals. And then at the ball, it was only the families of debutantes, and you're escorted by your father typically, and then you have a junior or assistant marshal who is a friend or a brother. And I think my family got 6 or 7 tickets for the event, and so you couldn't invite widespread people.
So your parents, your brother, and then, of course, they're the young men who are there to, I guess, provide drinks and dance with them, I would think. That's the whole point of this, is to meet young men,
yeah,
I would think. But that's another part of this, Cynthia. The whole point of this traditionally has been to present the young woman to young men of eligible age for marriage. That's what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is still about?
In some cities and in some societies, it still wants to be about that, I think. And this is where I found it so interesting that in some of these societies, at some of the functions, outsiders are not invited. Boyfriends are not allowed. And people are actually hired, women are actually hired to set up dates within this particular circumscribed circle of
because people. These are the people you because want the to people. Make family connections, permanent family connections.
Exactly, with. Yeah. Now, that's
what,
not
what
the case.
What about the boyfriend? If there's a boyfriend, why would
the boyfriend can get his nose out of joint really easily about that. You know?
But I mean, traditionally, if there was a boyfriend, wouldn't the boyfriend traditionally
be from inside that circle?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know if you're allowed to have a boyfriend before you were a debutante,
Exactly.
Right.
So this modern culture has kind of screwed this up, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's – the meaning, I think, is very different now. Even though there's still sort of the rich traditional rituals, I think the meaning is completely completely changed the significance of the event. And I think it does have one that maybe is equally concerning but is different.
You know, in this day and age when everything is so free and so open, this sounds – like it is fraught with possibilities or probabilities of being quite awkward between the young women and the young men who are there to meet and to have this party, to have a good time. If you don't know the guy, and there are three of them in your case, and how many were there for you? Three? Two?
Two.
Two. I mean, if you don't know these boys and they don't know you and they're a little awkward and guys don't like to – they don't want any part of them. What's that like?
Well, mine was a little different than what Cynthia was describing. So I did take my boyfriend and my brother and a friend. So they're all people I knew. So for me, it wasn't too bad. But
it seemed a bit awkward for me. The people were not 21 when I did it. I did it when I was a sophomore in college. So people were 18 or 19. And you walked into the party after the ball and everyone who was 21 went one way and everyone who was 18 went the other way because they didn't want underage people in the bar. And so it was this awkward thing of all these debutantes standing around with their escorts and there's a swing band playing and nobody really knows how to dance like that anymore. At least I don't. Maybe I'm not high society enough, but I just sort of was standing around wondering what to do and where to go and
you know,
how to act.
I thought about this yesterday because I thought there has to be music involved in this because it's dance. And the kind of dancing that lends itself to ball gowns is everything from Strauss waltzes to swing. It kind of stops there. It didn't go beyond Elvis. And now we're way beyond Elvis. So what do you dance to? What's the music? Was it swing in your case as well?
Yeah, they do a lot of swing and sort of like oldies. That's very popular in Richmond.
So do you know how to do the foxtrot? Do you know how to waltz?
We didn't do that. But sort of swing dancing, I think, is something that I grew up with sort of in Richmond.
Women learn how to dance. Guys generally don't. They used to have cotillions, and they used to have ballroom dancing lessons for young boys, 13, 14.
I had cotillions.
Yeah, I did too.
I do that, and a lot of these societies are attached to cotillions, so that the debutante ball is the sort of culmination of the cotillion.
So do these guys know how to dance?
Yeah. Richmond guys are pretty good dancers, I'd say.
Okay.
We also did the debutantes themselves, we had to do this strange little like line dance by ourselves beforehand that they came up like 2 days before. We practiced it like two times. It was not necessarily a finished product, but like they just sort of made up free-handed this little like dance for us, which was sort of odd.
And in your case?
You just showed up and they told you where to stand. There was no dance.
Okay. Was it fun? Because you're the skeptic here, Margaret. Was it fun for you?
I did not have fun, but I think that's more my personality. I don't enjoy like going to parties and drinking and doing all that sort of thing. So if you enjoy that, I think a lot of girls had a lot of fun. And the girls from Raleigh, there were a ton of them. So they all knew each other. They were all from inside the Beltline. So they knew each other. But I didn't know anybody. So
Now the word secret has come up in this conversation several times. That's one of the things that you focus on somewhat in your article, Cynthia, about the secrecy of all this. And even Margaret mentioned that nobody knows exactly how the process works or who the committee who nominates young women to become debutantes and to get these invitations are. They don't know who they are. They don't know what the criteria for their selection was. Did you find out any of that?
No, I didn't. They do a really good job of protecting the secrecy. In the case of St. Cecilia, which is which is probably the most exclusive debutante society in the country, at least that I know of. Membership determination is not secret. It's simply, did you inherit your place in this culture through your father? You cannot, you know, if marriage to a woman interrupts the patrilineal line, you cannot be a St. Cecilia debutante. What's secretive about St. Cecilia is all of the ritual. You're not allowed to talk about it. You're not allowed, if you're an outsider like me, you're not allowed to go into Hibernian Hall during the time when they're setting up. I sneaked in and took pictures, but we were kicked out.
What did you discover that was so secret?
Well, there's really nothing to it, it seems, but there's a rage to keep it secret. So much so that when I conducted one interview on the phone with a recent St. Cecilia debutante, her father was in the next room sort of listening in to be sure that she didn't reveal too much about what goes on at the ball, because it's just supposed to be kept absolutely private.
You wrote that you've done a lot of articles and a lot of research papers about things that require legitimately require secrecy.
Right.
And that this was the single most secret thing, impenetrably secret thing you've ever covered.
I was so surprised. I thought people would be happy to talk about these fun parties the way Sarah is. But what I discovered was that especially women who are beyond college age, mm-hmm. who were more the mothers of current debutantes and beyond, were and the men in those societies that are very obviously run by men, they did not want to talk about it, or if they did, they wanted to remain anonymous. And, I mean, I was just really taken aback
by
that. Well,
perhaps this is why. We have a comment from Scott on Facebook who says, I spent 2 years as an escort for the Neches River Festival in Beaumont, Texas, while I was in high school. I am convinced that the crass display of money, social climbing, and class discrimination turned me into a tree-hugging liberal that I am today.
Good for him.
I feel a little bit of that.
Do you?
I do.
I don't want to get terribly personal here, but obviously you are of a certain social class.
Yeah.
If you were invited to this, your family in Burlington is considered to be of a certain echelon. Mm-hmm. You don't consider yourself that, or do you just ignore that?
I just remember.
You're going to Davidson for crying out loud.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very fortunate. My parents support me, and they're incredible, but I just remember watching the money. And just a lot of it is just really vapid and shallow, and a lot of it holds tradition and is really meaningful. But to me, I just watched it and didn't want to be a part of that society forever. That just wasn't my heart, and that wasn't my desire to be stuck into old money and parties and ballroom dancing. Mm. I feel like there's more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to a certain extent. Like, I enjoyed my experience so much, but sometimes I would step back and I would be like, this is so, not only sort of like this conspicuous display of wealth, but really like narcissistic. The experience they provide for the debutantes is just one of like, you know, encourages vanity and sort of indulgence and that sort of thing.
Well, we'll follow up on that on the other side of the break. Sarah Freeman, Margaret Holt, Cynthia Lewis with us. We're talking about the debutante culture. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the J. Murray Atkins Library at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, offering the Honor with Books program in support of one of the world's leading research libraries, atkinsgifts.uncc.edu/honor. And Children's Theater of Charlotte, featuring the best Christmas pageant ever, Mayhem and Fun, meet the Christmas story head-on in this holiday classic, November 30th through December 23rd. Tickets available at ctcharlotte.com. Coming up, Diane and her guests talk about priorities and prospects for compromise on tax rates, spending cuts, and other key policy decisions in the final weeks of the lame duck Congress. That's in 20 minutes on the Diane Reeves Show at 10 here on WFAE. Want to join our conversation about the debutante phenomenon? 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE, or every other way online at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
When you make your year-end contributions to organizations that are important to you, we hope you have WFAE on your list. Listener support is critical to the news and information programs you enjoy. Make your pledge online, and you'll also be entered to win a trip for two to the Azores. No pledge is necessary to win, but we hope you'll consider making a tax-deductible investment in public radio. Help keep WFAE strong in 2013.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Cynthia Lewis is with us, Dana Professor of English at Davidson College, author of Secret Sharing, Debutantes, coming out in the American South, which appears in the, I think, the current issue of Southern Cultures Journal. Also with us, two seniors at Davidson. Both of them are debutantes. Margaret Holt is a public health major and debuted in Raleigh. Sarah Freeman is a history major and debuted in Richmond. Given the fact that both of you, both of the debutantes around the table here, have talked a little bit in the last segment about the display of money and that aspect of this not being terribly appetizing, what do your friends say? You have friends at Davidson. I know female friends at Davidson who are not debutantes and are not part of that culture. Do they get it when you say, well, I'm going off to my debutante ball this weekend? Do they go, what?
I don't tell people. when I did it.
This doesn't sound like fun to me.
When
anymore.
I did it sophomore year, I told people where I was going, but no one got it because it's so foreign. And in high school, when my high school friends and I told them I was invited, it was sort of this air of embarrassment because I just struggled my whole life being identified by how much money I had. And this was just an affirmation of that. Mm. Like I was reduced to my dad's salary and not who I was as a person. So.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's something that I shared with people who I knew would understand it. I feel like to those outside the culture, not only is it like sort of foreign, but I think I didn't want to come off that, you know what I mean? I don't want to seem elitist by my participation in it.
Well, and both of you had the courage to come on this program today. I mean, seriously, because we're talking about this. This is something that you don't particularly like, Margaret and Sarah. I mean, I'm sure that this is not completely comfortable. Why did you say yes?
To appearing on the program?
Yeah,
or
to talk about this. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was a little nervous about saying something that would either present, you know, I feel like I had to have to walk a line between presenting my community and my in a bad light and then myself saying something that comes off the wrong way. I feel like I was interested to engage in a dialogue about it, and I wasn't too afraid to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are people from Charlotte Society who are debutantes or people who are in the Terpsichorean Society or Terpsichorean Club listening and fuming, and I think the process is interesting and holds value, but I think there should be really fruitful conversation that comes and they evaluate why they're doing it and what it's for, and that purpose should be clearly communicated.
What has the reaction to your article been?
I haven't heard a lot, but I did get one remarkable email letter from a woman who, she didn't state her age, but obviously her disappointment at not having been invited to be a debutante in Gastonia stayed with her for a long time. And to make a fairly long story short, a friend of hers looked into why she was the only one in her high school group who was not included, and the friend said that it was because her father was considered too working class to be included. And she had really kept this hurt for a long, long time and was sharing it with me in that email.
Yeah, there are people for whom this is very important, it would seem to me, and because everybody has their own interests in the world, and this may be one of somebody's interests, and they don't get the invitation. Do you know young women who didn't get one and who were hurt by it, or were they admitted to you because you got one?
I think I was a little bit buffered because, I mean, both of us, we were invited when we were in college, so the people that were hurt, maybe I don't interact with them, but I'm sure that there are because everybody wants to be a princess.
And is that the worst thing that can happen? Now, in the old days, in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, if you did not get an invitation to the ball, if you were not going to be a debutante, that really hurt your prospects for marriage at a time when everything depended on who your husband was, correct?
That's right.
So today, that's the worst thing. You just don't get the invitation and life goes on?
I think so. I think it's so different from culture to culture, from city to city. In some towns and cities, it's still a be-all and end-all. Mm-hmm. And in others, it's not even a blip on the radar.
Do those towns and cities where it's the be-all and end-all tend to be smaller towns and cities? Or do they tend to be places like – you looked at the Charleston, South Carolina, and the Idlewild Club in Dallas, Texas.
Right. Well, Dallas is really big, but we're also talking about pockets of communities, mm-hmm. too. And – In Charleston, it's different because everybody knows who's going to be, at least in St. Cecilia, then there are other debutante circuits there, too. But for the Idlewild Club, I mean, they only choose 3, 4, or 5 women a year according to standards that they don't publish or make known. And so I can imagine that if you weren't selected to be in that group, it could be very hurtful because you could be growing up thinking, oh, I'm going to be one of those Idlewild debutantes and I'm going to be exposed to all these eligible rich men.
Would it be safe to say that it's equally hurtful or concerning to the parents because their daughter wasn't chosen and that's reflective on them?
Mm-hmm. And even if I didn't enjoy the process, looking back, I think I would have been offended if I hadn't been chosen because I expected it because my mom and grandmother were, which is hard. It's like this catch-22. Like, I can't be upset about it, but I think I would have felt personally attacked if I hadn't been chosen.
Princess on Facebook wants to know what, if any, connection there is between this and pageantry. Is there any competition involved? There really isn't. None that you can participate in. Personally,
I mean, I think there's competition, but it's not on the official level.
You can't lobby for it. You can't.
No, I guess I meant between the debutantes once you're already chosen. There's, of course, that. But no. I don't think in vying for an invitation, there's a lot. There's nothing you can do.
Alex writes, Terpsichorean means of or related to dance. It comes from Terpsichore, one of the 9 muses in Greek mythology. The muses represent the great arts, according to the Greeks. The other muses are Clio, history, Thalia, comedy, Erato, love poetry. I'm going to say this wrong. Is it euterpe or euterp? Song, E-U-T-E-R-P. Mm. Enough of these Greek words. Thank you very much for the email, Alex, but I'll leave you. We can publish this and people can put their own pronunciations on these. Martin writes, Mike, you mentioned that you are a proponent of elitism, but doesn't it cause people to separate groups? Doesn't it make real conversations with the outsiders difficult? What I meant by that is I think we should aspire to the highest standards available and that being an elitist because you hold the point of view that you want to achieve at the highest level as opposed to being part of the lowest common denominator is something that we should all aspire to. And if you look back at the, for instance, the films of the 1930s, everybody wanted to be Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and wear the tuxedo and the ball gown and dance like they did and be in high society because that was something special. Not everybody could do it. Not everybody would do it, but that's something to aspire to. And now we all want to wear our pants below our rear ends and et cetera. And that's just not, I don't think, the right thing to aspire to. Let's put your headphones on. We'll take a phone call here from Kelly in Charlotte. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Cynthia Lewis, I thank you for trying to tackle this subject. That no one can really get into because you can't get information about it. And Margaret Holt, because you don't like Mary, right, Margaret?
Yes.
And Sarah, I really appreciate the fact that you have the courage to come on and be interviewed for the show. I think it is my interpretation of elitist is quite different than yours, Mike. Aspiring to be better, aspiring to stand for something good or be hired does not equate with the elitist definition of today, which is you're in a category because of your position, which is basically because of your money or your heritage, which is kind of perpetuated by the balls from what I heard. My question, I guess, would be the comment you made, Dr. Lewis, about the woman in Gastonia, how she felt segregated or left out because of that, and it stuck with her for years. Why is it that no one knows what the parameters are to be chosen as a debutante? And is it because it's such a secret society, because it's based on your paternal, you know, heritage and whether or not you have money?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, and I think it's the question, really. And the answer that I think I would provide is that secrecy is a form of power. Keeping a secret from somebody else is a way of having influence over that person or power over that person. And the objective in some of these societies is to maintain social power, maintain social position. And if you let the secret out, it may not be anything more than that person had blue eyes. But if the secret's out, then everybody knows it, and there's a kind of...
You no longer maintain it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a kind of draining of power.
And I think this is Margaret. I think even thinking about it now, from when I was a little girl, there was always this idea that the Deb Committee was watching, and so you needed to be
like
this,
Santa.
Like, upstanding... Yeah, like Santa. This upstanding woman, and so there was always someone watching you to see if you were qualified. And I think that was part of it, too. The secrecy drives women, and I think this is maybe a good thing, drives women to be upstanding and act appropriately and represent themselves and their families well.
And Sarah, is that the same for you?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a different experience because I feel like it's sort of out there what the criteria are for the Belle de Bois. It's sort of more open because it is ostensibly – I mean, it is for charity. So I think that if someone came and said that they really wanted to be a debutante and they were willing to pay all the associated costs, I don't think that they would have a reason to turn them away. And then for the German, it's all dependent on whether your parents, I think, are in the German society, which has its own sort of – legacy requirements for membership, but I mean, you know, coming into it, whether you're in or not. So that may have been one of the factors that made my experience more positive, because I didn't experience people who were like, you know, the disappointment. I just, you know, I knew a lot of people who chose not to do it, but I didn't know anyone who was, you know, denied an opportunity that they were really had been dreaming about.
But you wouldn't have, because if they weren't part of your circle, you wouldn't have known, correct?
Yeah, I guess that is absolutely true.
That same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate you guys answering my question. And again, Dr. Lewis, I really appreciate you trying to tackle this subject.
Thank you.
And thanks again, Margaret and Sarah. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your call, Kelly. And I'm actually with you on this elitist thing. I don't think so, Mike. I think our use of the word may be different. I think elitism, for the sake of being separate and being elitist, I'm better than you, is not what I'm talking about.
But that's what the word is. So then I stand corrected. Yeah,
okay.
That's wonderful, Mike. I'd like to hear it.
All right, thank you, Kelly.
Bye-bye.
One of the things, aside from secrecy, that you were shocked by, because you said you were frankly shocked by that, but you were also shocked by how most of the women you interviewed hadn't reflected at all on their choice to do this, to be part of this, to participate. But is that simply because they've grown up? Since this is a society that goes back generations after generation after generation, you grow up expecting this to be a part of your life. Why would you reflect on it? Why would you think twice about it? This is what is done in our family.
Right. I think that's true, but I also think that a ritual that involves presenting oneself in a wedding dress and being escorted by your father, and at some point in most balls and most ceremonies being then transferred to an escort. All of this ritual is rich in symbolism, and the symbolism means something, and I guess I approach it sort of as a literary critic. But this, you know, what's this imitation of a wedding ceremony about? What exactly are you saying?
Is it dress rehearsal for the wedding?
Well, I think it sort of is. But I think there's also this curious attachment to the father going on that, to me, just warrants some investigation.
Well, the father gives away the bride.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I know my mom in the audience later remarked that there was something sort of weird to her about it seeming sort of like a cattle market or something. There's a part where you come down the staircase and all the escorts form like a line that you walk through with your dad and then he presents you. But for me, experience it, I mean, it I didn't distinguish it from any of the other, like, thousands of father-daughter events that have been built into, you know, all my rituals of coming of age, like the cotillions, we have a father-daughter dance, all sorts of father-daughter events at school that it didn't seem weird to me at the time.
And it is a tradition that is of an earlier time. Does that necessarily negate the validity of it or the,
I'm not
or
saying
the reason
it should.
You would participate in it?
No, not necessarily at all. I guess I'm just curious, and mm-hmm. I would expect really smart, independent women to be curious and to interrogate it a little bit. And then if they're happy with what they discover, more power to them.
And I only have a minute left, but one of the things that you discovered is that a lot of these, not cotillion, but a lot of these debutante cultures around the country are run by men. Mm-hmm. They're not run by the women. Mm-hmm. They're not run by the mother. They're run by the fathers and business people, et cetera.
And I think that tends to be a secret even to some of the people who participate in it. And that's another thing that I really want women to think about,
yeah.
what they're doing when they're carrying out the wishes of their husbands.
Lou Powell, former editor of The Observer and former guest on the show, has an excerpt from Time magazine in 1951. It says, "For many a decade, an old social tradition has plagued North Carolina's country belles. The only affair that would surely stamp them debutantes was Raleigh's big Terpsichorean ball.
Yeah.
But others thought it unfair that Raleigh should set itself up to be the social arbiter of the state, so last year the ladies of Charlotte decided to throw off the yoke. Charlotte, they reasoned, was bigger, richer, and nicer than Raleigh and should have a say of its own. They seceded from Raleigh's society, announced their plans for the Charlotte debutante ball." That's in 1951. Cynthia Lewis's article is in the Southern Cultures Journal, Secret Sharing, Debutantes Coming Out in the American South. She's a professor of English at Davidson College, and our two debutantes here are seniors at Davidson, Sarah Freeman, a history major, and Margaret Holt, public health major. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.